Welcome back to Booze and Buffy, a podcast where we are watching and discussing every episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel of the series, one by one. There will be no spoilers for future episodes, but we will be discussing details from this and all previous episodes. Hanging out in a cave, paralyzing people, I'm Harrison.
And I'm Jason, and I spent most of this episode trying not to compare it to the movie The Others, but did it anyway. Harrison, what episode are we watching this week?
We are watching Buffy Season 7, Episode 3, Same Time, Same Place. This is the one where Willow returns to Sunnydale. However, due to her own anxieties and a little bit of magic, she is unable to see or hear or feel, apparently, Xander, Buffy, and Dawn. And vice versa. Also, something is skinning people.
Is it Willow? Who knows? Let's find out. Same Time, Same Place was written by Jane Espenson, one of our favorites, and was directed by James A. Conner, another one of our favorites. And it originally aired on October 8th, 2002.
All right, Jason.
Yeah.
We're alcoholing.
We are indeed.
What are you alcoholing?
I am drinking what we had last week, the Franzia box wine, red, and but it is in one of your very cool stemless wine glasses.
Yeah. I decided to forgo the wine for the moment, and I'm having a vodka and 7-Up, which... I feel like we looked this up once and was like, what's the name of this drink? And it's just vodka and 7-Up. It doesn't have a fancy name. So, yeah.
Means, hey, put those creative muscles to work and make a creative name for this drink.
It's the...
Gnarl.
Heads down. I was going to say the heads down 7-Up. Like heads up 7-Up.
Yeah.
But because you're drinking, you will... pass out.
That's fun. That's a fun name for a drink. Especially if you put as much vodka in as you did.
Yeah, it was a slightly taller pour than I intended, especially for 3:30 in the afternoon. All right. A toast to friendships that can survive even the hardest of hardships, as for instance, murdering someone and trying to end the world. You know, find you a friend who will forgive you for that.
Been there, done that.
Cheers. All right. So before the episode started, Jason was like, do you think we'll start the episode with like a random girl being murdered somewhere in the world? And I was like confident. I was like, oh yeah, I'm pretty certain that we are.
He was confident to the point where I was like, where in the world is a girl gonna get killed next?
And the answer is nowhere. I was proven wrong immediately upon pressing play.
I mean, we open up in an airport, so you could think that it's somewhere else, but...
Yeah, so, we're at Sunnydale Airport, who apparently has not instated any sort of post-9/11 security measures, because Buffy, Xander, and Dawn are right at the gate to welcome Willow home. They're all having different feelings about this return. Xander is very excited to see her. He has brought a sign that he wrote, "Welcome back, Willow," in yellow crayon.
He says he used a yellow crayon, but let's be honest, he had to have used several or one very large yellow crayon.
It's one of those jumbo crayons. Dawn and Buffy are a little more apprehensive Dawn in particular, especially when Willow tells them that, oh, yeah, Willow didn't actually complete the, like, recovery training program thing she was doing. But Giles felt it was very important that she come back early due to the upcoming vagueness that's been alluded to.
It's an apocalypse, I guess. Because that's what we do in Sunnydale.
Yeah. I do love it's very obvious that Xander has been talking about his speech quite a bit over the summer, and Buffy and Dawn give him some good-natured ribbing.
He doesn't get to save the world too much by himself, so he got to save the world with his mouth.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
He kind of did that in the season one finale when he CPR'd Buffy.
Mm-hmm. Different kind of using of the mouth.
I don't know why I can't just... Why I'm doing this weird thing where I can't just say things correctly. Like, oh, we're alcoholing. He's CPR'd her. I'm turning a lot of verbs into noun, or nouns into verbs. I mean, I guess this show does that a lot.
I was about to say, you fit right at home in Sunnydale, because you're not only apocalypse, we do that.
Yeah. They are, however, very concerned when the cabin crew closes the doors and there is no sign of Willow. That was a rewind sound. We now get to see this same exact scene from Willow's perspective, because we go back to when the people start disembarking from the plane. And there is, the first time we see this, there is a family very prominently featured, a teenage, young boy, teenage girl, and presumably their father. The kids are bickering, one kid drops his backpack, the dad's annoyed. We see that happen, play out again. This episode's very good when we're seeing these scenes, from the two different perspectives about... something that really catches your eye, so that you know.
And also, it doesn't... it only does it a couple times.
Yeah. So, once we know the score, it's like...
But it's written by Jane Espenson, so...
It's a really well
done episode. It's tight.
Tight.
And,
But yeah, so this time, though, we do see that Willow is right behind this family. She comes through, and she... is very upset to, from her perspective, find no one waiting for her. And then we go to credits.
I wonder who's going to be here to see me. No one, no one.
That night, there's a at Xander's construction site. There's some kid... spray painting graffiti onto the wall.
The first half of what he's spray painting is spider.
Oh, really? I didn't even notice that.
Well, you don't really see it clearly until the next day when they find his body.
Okay.
But it's spider hyphen something. I'm like, is he graffitiing Spider-Man up there? That'd be fun.
Apparently his name is Mac.
Mac.
Identified in the series only by his unfinished signature, Spider-Mac.
Oh, okay.
His name is revealed as Mac in the episode's script.
Alright.
Okay. I love that this character not only has a name, but, like, has his own page on the wiki. He's played by Matt Caruba. He's known for Party of Five, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and VR5.
Matt Caruba?
anyway, so Mac hears some creepy sing-song whispery, this high-pitched thing that's like, you're all alone, are you afraid to be all alone?
It's they're like, all gonna laugh at you! I've used that twice now in the course of this season.
Oh my gosh.
And I've gotten you to laugh both times, so I'm proud of myself.
It's because you do an excellent, excellent impression of her. That's like how she fucking sounds in the movie. And like, in no shade to Piper Laurie, who played, this is, for anyone who doesn't know, this is a reference to Brian De Palma's Carrie, where Margaret White yells exactly that in that tone.
They're all gonna laugh at you!
It's Sissy Spacek before she goes to the prom. And then it gets repeated a bunch after they do the blood dunk. You just
because they do all laugh at her.
But maybe not. I can't remember if, actually, I don't remember if it's that version or not. Or there's at least one version where it's like, there's a billion versions of Carrie, where you see it from Carrie's perspective and they are all laughing at her. But then it cuts to more of an outside perspective and like some people are laughing and some people are like, what the fuck? And it's a more realistic mm-hmm. response than what Carrie's perceiving. Great movie. I did not like it the first time I watched it. I don't think I understood. It's the first time I'd ever seen a De Palma film, and he has a very, very distinct style. He uses a lot of split screen and stuff like that, and the first time I watched it, I was like, whoa, I don't care for this, but it's very much grown on me. Although I am still waiting for a version of Carrie that actually commits to the town's destruction from the book.
Same. She tears shit up in the book.
Yeah.
And both the Sissy Spacek and the Chloe Grace Moretz version.
Yeah.
Like, both of them are like, oh, yeah, sure, it's gonna be crazy. And then it's just like, oh, I kill, like, a few kids, you know, set the school on fire. That's it.
Yeah. The Chloe Grace Moretz version teases it. And I feel like I saw somewhere that a lot more was filmed of, like, the town's destruction that fucking studio made them cut.
I mean, it was rated R and...
Yeah, I think it was more for length.
Oh.
But still. Also, Carrie just celebrated its, like, 50th anniversary.
Oh, of it being published?
Yeah, which is so cool.
I mean, could you ask for, like, a better debut novel?
Right.
Maybe Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, but...
Yeah.
I mean, dang.
He came out of the gate with a banger.
I mean, honestly, three bangers in a row with Carrie, Salem's Lot, and The Shining.
Yeah. And then The Stand, right after The Shining.
I think a Night Shift might have been published before then, or maybe some of the Bachman books, but...
Yeah, I think you're right. But of, like...
I could be wrong, but...
Full novels under his own name. Because I don't think he was revealed as Bachman until, like, the 2000s.
Fair enough. Spoiler alert, Stephen King is Richard Bachman.
I also, just speaking of, so off topic, but speaking of very good Stephen King adaptations, the underrated and underseen Dolores Claiborne, starring Kathy Bates.
You are a huge fan of that one.
It's a great book. The book is a fucking 300-400 page monologue. It is, it's Dolores testifying to the police after the death of her employer. And the whole book is like the stream of conscious, like, novel, which I could go so wrong, but it's so good. Obviously, they don't do that for the movie, but it's a very smart, adaptation. And it's Kathy Bates and Jennifer Jason Leigh giving two career best performances.
Queens.
In a great movie, and I bring it up because it heavily features a solar eclipse. It's got a sister novel, Gerald's Game, that also features the same eclipse. And there's a very brief moment where the protagonists of each novel during the eclipse have a brief psychic connection to one another. In otherwise completely non-supernatural stories.
And, you know, I mean, Stephen King's works are connected.
Yes,
so.
Through the Dark Tower and all that. Gerald's Game was also adapted into a very good film by Mike Flanagan that's on Netflix. So anyway.
Back to the creepy voice.
Gnarl, as the demon is, we will later find out, is called. He slices Mac and we don't see it, but it is the end of Mac.
Mm-hmm.
There will be no return.
The return of the Mac. The true spinoff of Buffy.
Willow arrives at the Summers' house, which there actually is no one there at first. She comes in through the back door. She goes up into...
It is important that it is noted, and this is probably the last time that it actually is shown, that, like, to indicate that they are all there at the same time, apart from, like, a couple, like, throwaway things, mm-hmm. but they do emphasize the time,
which yes.
is 10:41, I yep. think. And, again, it's not too much, because it shows that... Oh, this is happening, like, exactly the same time.
Yeah. Willow goes upstairs. She goes into her room, although it is now... now Buffy's room. Which is... I want to clock this, because I was... I noticed that like, Buffy's stuff was in there, and then later we see Willow... in Buffy's room, mm-hmm. which has that very distinct roof thing
yeah.
above the bed. But I was like, I have memories of them being Buffy or Willow having the master bedroom and Buffy back in her old bedroom later in the season. And maybe that's just me making shit up or.
Well,
there are circumstances where it could yeah, later on in the season where
yeah,
they
see... mild spoiler, they get a few house guests as the season goes on.
Yeah, a few. but she goes in there, she looks at the window where we get a brief audio flashback of Tara's death. I found this to be handled far better than the flashback to the sexual assault last week.
Agreed, yeah. I don't necessarily think it was necessary, but it also didn't bother me.
Yeah, it was fast enough that I was we haven't really addressed the Tara of it this season. Willow's only been in a couple of scenes up to this point, so you know, having an acknowledgement of it, even if we haven't really gone there yet with the grief, is nice. She's looking at Buffy's planner, sees some phone numbers, but she is startled by the sound of the front door closing loudly. She drops the planner and goes downstairs looking for them. Unfortunately, she finds no one. So she goes, lies on the couch with her shoes on, which is, that's Dark Willow coming out.
Her last act of evil.
but no, she lies down on the couch and falls asleep. We get this same sort of sequence of events this time from from our Scooby trio. They come in the front door. They talk about Giles. They called Giles. They confirmed that she definitely got on the plane. So they suspect maybe she, you know, when they had a layover in Chicago, that perhaps she got off in Chicago. Perhaps she doubled back and is after Giles left and is still in England.
I mean, they're right. You can go pretty much anywhere from Chicago.
Yeah. gosh bless you.
Thank you.
I
mean, raise your hand if you've ever had to go through Chicago before going to your destination.
Hands are raised.
Yes.
And
I feel like I should raise my hand multiple times for how many times it's happened. And I honestly, I haven't flown that much.
I
know you've probably flown probably twice as much as I have, but...
Maybe, I don't
but
know.
But, like, it's... I feel that, every flight that I've had has almost definitely either gone through Atlanta or Chicago.
Yeah, I'm like every time I've flown internationally, which is twice, once to Montreal, once to Sweden, was through Chicago. We drove to Chicago for our Sweden trip. But I mean, even if we had flown out of Louisville, we would have flown into Chicago more than likely.
Now, when I went to, on our Europe trip, my family and I, and we flew to Dublin. Mm-hmm. Well, at least when I flew to Dublin, I went through Raleigh. So,
okay, South Carolina.
North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Yeah, nice. Of all the places. Raleigh is North Carolina. Yes, Raleigh is North Carolina.
Okay.
You have me questioning basic U.S. geography.
You
now.
Really don't know. I'm not the person who should be. You should be doubting yourself on. If I say something about geography, I'm probably wrong.
Yes, it's Raleigh, North Carolina. Okay. Thank you.
I'm bad at geography. Huh. I'm bad at basic directions. John has to help me navigate through this city. I'm like, how do I get there? And he's like, John, Harrison, we're going to your parents' house.
Yeah, I feel like in every relationship, there is the one person that knows how to get anywhere.
That's John.
And the one person who knows how to get nowhere. Like,
that's
me. You're like, they use GPS to get to work every day.
Yeah, I can. I'm not that bad. I can get to work. I can. I was joking when I know how to get to my parents' houses. Mm-hmm. Certain family members that we go to their house with frequently, mm-hmm. I know how to get there. If it's a place that I go with any frequency, then I know how to get there. But, like, from my house. If I'm starting at a different start location, we might have some problems.
I have this very interesting, I guess it's a talent, that if I have to go to some place that I've never been to twice, mm-hmm. then I'm good on getting there from then on.
Yeah.
Like, I may need, like GPS to get there the first two times, but as long as it's, like, someplace that I go to within maybe a year or so, then, I can do that. So.
John's very similar. John has an uncanny knack for directions. Sometimes he'll be like, we'll like go out for a drive and he'll just kind of drive sort of randomly. And we did this a lot during like the early days of lockdown.
Yeah.
And he'll just get us kind of lost, like quasi lost. And then he'll be like, eventually he'll be like, okay, I know where we are. Like, we're good. I'm like, wow, I could not do that. I would end up in fucking Dublin somehow.
Do you mean Dublin, Ohio or Dublin, Ireland?
I meant Dublin, Ireland.
Okay.
You know, in the Muppets when they drive
they
through the ocean.
Like car.
Yeah. All right. So, yes, they come in. Xander.
Oh, no, they travel by map.
Travel by map. Yeah. That's right.
I'm sorry, guys.
Xander closes that front door much louder than he needs to, other than for story purposes.
Because he's a man.
But they hear Willow upstairs drop the planner. I like how they can hear, they can't hear her like come down the stairs. So like noise that she's making and vice versa, they can't hear. But like if they knock something over or close a door.
Maybe it's like a proximity thing.
Yeah. But they go upstairs, they look for her, don't find her. They sit on the couch in Willow, basically. And they're like, you know, maybe it's our fault for, you know, we made her nervous that she couldn't come back. Giles is blaming himself.
You know, if Willow had been awake for this, maybe we could have resolved this part of the episode right? A little bit quicker.
Yeah. But this is a good Dawn episode. Actually, I really feel like every character is firing on all cylinders in this episode.
Well, we're getting the gang back together.
Yeah, and it's much smaller now. But yeah, Dawn's like, okay, Giles is blaming Giles, and we're blaming us. Like, is anyone gonna hold Willow accountable for her actions? And then she, one of my favorite lines, maybe of the whole series, is like, God, when is anyone in this group just going to ask for help? Thank you, Dawn.
We're like going to use that mentality back in season six.
Right? But then we do get a cool transition of the camera kind of pans, and we fade out on the three of them and fade Willow in. And I do think this is the last time that it's really,
emphasized.
It's like, okay, this is the premise. Mm-hmm. You've got it. This, if you don't have it by now, we can't help you.
I actually appreciate that they kind of got this going right at the beginning of the episode. Like, they could have just stuck with the Gnarl, like, with Gnarl, but... at the beginning.
Yeah.
But I like that, you know, they... First thing was established, apart from how the gang feels about Willow coming back, the first thing that's established is this.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, something's wrong.
Yeah. Because, no, you're right. The cold open easily could have been the Gnarl scene. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no narrative reason why... those things couldn't have been flipped, other than, you know, it has to happen after Willow gets back. But
yeah,
even flipping those scenes, I don't think causes any sort of continuity errors there. The next morning, Willow wakes up on the couch. She's really concerned because presumably if anyone had come home,
yeah,
they would have woken her up. She tries to call Giles, who is conveniently in a Watchers Council meeting and will not be able to reach him for the whole day. It's like, all right, nicely took care of that little business.
Yeah, as we said, this script is incredibly tight, and that's just the way the Jane Espenson goes.
Yeah. She goes to the magic box and finds Anya. I find it very interesting that Anya is not affected by this spell. It makes sense to me.
Well, and Spike isn't affected by it either. So I think, given that her last encounters with them were, you know, or her last feelings of them were, you know, her just assuming that Anya wants nothing to do with her after after her wedding with Xander, and you know, Spike kind of being ostracized from the group. I mean, she probably wasn't even expecting Spike to be in Sunnydale.
Yeah.
After seeing Red, so I think it makes total sense that only these three are affected by it, because those were the three that she was legitimately worried about what they would say, and probably the only people that she expected to welcome her back.
Yeah. Anya is quite rightfully pissed at Willow.
Mm-hmm.
I love when, because she's collecting debris from the magic box, and
it is boarded up.
Boarded up and closed. RIP the magic box. Willow's like, I feel really responsible. And Anya just goes, you are really responsible. And Willow's just like, okay, you know, I don't expect you to forgive me. You know, lay it all out. You know, lay it on me. And Anya's like, you won't get mad? And she's like, no. And then Anya's like, well, that's no fun. But they have a bit of a heart-to-heart, and I feel like really connect in a way that they never have before. You know, obviously after Triangle, they patched things up, but I feel like this is the first time that they have seemed to really get each other.
And I think it might have to do with the fact that as opposed to... how they were towards each other in Triangle, they both have been very recently humbled.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Anya fills Willow in on everyone's behavior, I mean, that's technically right, but it just feels very like...
What's up with you today?
I don't know. It's all this vodka. I forgot to mention I was guzzling vodka before you got
it's
here.
It's all this vodka. Damn this hate.
Damn this baby. But no, she tells, you know, basically she's like, everyone's at the high school. You know, Dawn's a student there. Buffy's got a job. Spike's insane in the basement. Xander works there. And Willow's like, Spike's what? In the what mint?
Insane base. Which is also the best way to describe every Rush song. Insane base. My man, Geddy Lee.
So she goes, Willow goes over to the construction site to see if she can find them. Unfortunately, she finds Mac. Skinless Mac.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, we didn't know that that's what was going to happen to Mac.
Yeah.
Like, we just assumed that, oh, this weird goblin thing's gonna do something to him, and, no one was expecting, like, the whole, like, oh, he's been flayed completely.
Yep. Pretty gross. Pretty gross.
I have to say, Gnarl is one of the grosser, demons that we've seen on the show, and, like, his appearance, his modus operandi, he's almost as dangerous as a xenomorph, because it's like, there's always something new about him that's like, nasty, but I kind of dig it. I really like it, and I also find it kind of funny, because this past Friday, and we're recording this on Sunday, so 2 days ago, I went to Cincinnati to a Deathclaw concert. The main reason that I was there was because one of their openers was one of my favorite bands, Dragon Force.
Nice.
Bomb-ass show, by the way. I need to tell you. I'll tell you about it right now, because our listeners might appreciate this as well. I haven't listened to their newest album, Warp Speed Warriors, but they are very much like influenced from their sound to later on, just their lyrics are very much influenced by video games. One of their songs, their lead single from their newest album is... I think it's a... Let me get this right. I'm pretty sure it's Legend of the Triforce.
Okay.
And it's specifically about The Legend of Zelda. Which... And of course, you know, it being their newest song, they wanted to... Power of the Triforce, which makes more sense. They played it, but as they were playing it, they're like, all right, so guys, it wouldn't be a Legend of Zelda theme song if we didn't have a big chicken for you guys to throw around. So they brought out this giant plush chicken and threw it into the crowd, and the crowd just was like throwing it everywhere. Like, you know, there was the general admission pit, but then there was also like two levels, and they actually got it up to both levels.
Nice.
And also the song was a lot of fun. But yeah, Dragon Force, just a delightful band.
I really liked when, speaking of the Cuckoos, when Breath of the Wild first came out, and Tears of the Kingdom, both games when they came out, I really loved watching videos of people just getting really creative with the games. And one of them that I found was someone going to Kakariko Village, attacking the chickens, which... If you've ever played a Zelda game, you know that if you attack them, they fight back.
Yeah.
And can be deadly little bastards.
Yes.
So this person attacked them and then just got on their horse and rode all the way to Hyrule Castle with the chickens chasing and jumped down to... No, that's not what it was. They grabbed a chicken out of Kakariko Village, took it all the way to Hyrule Castle, jumped down into the pit with Ganon, and then let the chicken get hit by Ganon, because not only will the cuckoos attack the player if they get attacked, they'll attack monsters that hit them as well. And so they just let the chicken get attacked.
That's
by Ganon.
Amazing.
It was so cool. It was so funny.
Yeah. But anyway. Sorry. No, that's super dope, though. But anyway, the reason that I brought this concert is because the other opener for Death Clock was a band called Necrogoblicon.
These bands have such cool names.
They really do. And now, the thing about this band is that they are like kind of like a crazy death metal band. Mm-hmm. Their main singer is a like it's like 80% screaming, which I'm kind of not really into. I prefer, like, I love heavy metal, but I love when I can understand the lyrics. Mm-hmm. But the other singer and hype man of their band is a goblin named John.
Nice.
Here is a picture that I took, and he is on the left.
Oh my god! Sorry, I didn't notice him at first because I was like looking at that guy. Oh my god, that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, and he actually, it's funny because he kind of
looks like the Gnarl.
And I was thinking about that every time I saw the Gnarl on screen. And so that's a. I mean, I haven't looked up more about this band. I can only assume that they call him Goblin John.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because he also sings. And he sings, like, the actual, like, melodic part of it, mm-hmm. as opposed to the screaming. So, I was, like, not expecting that. But then, you know, when he's, like, talking and stuff, he's like, "Are you all really happy to be here tonight? Why did you come to a Death Clock concert? You know what happens to their fans? They fucking die!"
That's weird.
It was a very fun show. I've seen two incredibly strange metal bands in the last 2 weeks, and this was the more normal of them.
Okay.
The other one was a band called Trollfest, and their recent album involved a lot of like flamingo theme songs. And for their set, they're not the band that I went to go see at the concert that I went to that I saw them at. For their set, they came out all dressed as flamingos.
You know, I have an old coworker who's also a big metal person, and you know, I'm really not nothing against it. It's just not my scene.
Yeah, no, it's just not your.
But she would describe to me concerts that she would go to, and it would be similar stories to what you're telling me, and I'm like, wow. I'm not really interested in like going to these concerts, but I'm fascinated to hear about them.
No, they're a legit concert that, and I feel that because heavy metal is one of those genres, mm-hmm. where you can just go nuts.
It feels very theatrical.
Yeah, kind of almost what I assume like I'm not personally into it myself, but what I assume people get like really excited about like wrestling for. Because I feel like you don't get this at a country band or at a country concert, yeah. or a pop concert or even like, you know, your standard rock concerts. I feel like this is something that more happens at like probably rap concerts, mm-hmm. and heavy metal concerts.
Yeah.
Interesting. But yeah, so I was very much thinking of Necrogoblicon whenever I saw the Gnarl on screen.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, though. The Gnarl is... Or Gnarl. Just Gnarl.
Yeah, it's just Gnarl.
Is a really great monster of the week. This whole episode, you know, much like I said this in the premiere, and I'm going to say it for a few episodes that we're going to get in the near future, feels very much like a throwback to the earlier seasons.
Yeah.
It feels like the spiritual successor to Out of Mind, Out of Sight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we literally have in that episode, it was the Hellmouth, you know, doing it. It's Willow doing it in this episode. But I love that, you know, those episodes that are very like, we're going to take kind of a universal emotion and turn it into something very literal.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it's happening to Willow, and it ties so strongly into her arc and her relationship with her friends, just makes this a standout episode for me.
Yeah. And in season seven, one of the things that it succeeds at is throwing, and we've mentioned this before, but it does succeed in throwing back to not just season one, but also mm-hmm. like season two and three. I mean, episode that I'm really looking forward to is him.
Yes.
And that very much throws back to a great season two episode. Mm-hmm. I love the old school feel of this and like the old school demon too, because while the show notably has better special effects now than it did back in seasons one and two, it still does try to focus on the practical effects. Mm-hmm. And you know, Gnarl's like a great costume as well, like great makeup. Hats off to the every person involved in the design of that character.
Yeah, me agree.
You're killing me with this alternate vocabulary.
So yes, Willow discovers the body while at the same time Xander is showing the body to Buffy. He discovered it early that morning before his employees got there. He told them not to come in and called Buffy first thing. And Buffy's
a good boss.
Great boss.
Yeah. Like have we already talked about, we mentioned it at the end of season six, but what a great growth Xander has gone through.
He's really got his life together. Mm-hmm. Buffy's like, I really need a job where I'm not the first person people call. Sorry, Buffy.
Yeah, the Slayer is your job, so sorry, man.
They hear the ladder rattle a bit as Willow climbs up it. And here, you know, this is a point where we're kind of flipping back and forth between the two kind of quickly, but it's really not, they're not really calling attention to it anymore. It's just matter of fact. She flees. She goes into the high school. You know, I guess it was 2002. We didn't have the highest of security in schools.
Probably if you got through the metal detector, you're good.
Yeah. I don't even know if they would have metal detectors.
Yeah.
I didn't have metal detectors in my high school.
Yeah, but this is a public high school.
True.
And I know that is a thing at public high schools. I don't know when it started being a thing.
Yeah.
I know that I remember seeing it in movies as early as 2008. But, you know, and it might not be all public schools, but I'm pretty sure that a lot of public high schools have metal detectors.
And I also wonder, you know, if that varies state by state or But yeah, she goes into the school. She walks down to the basement, finding Spike. It's easy to tell quite early on that he's talking to both Willow and Xander and Buffy.
Well, it's so funny because, you know, in every scene that he's had, mostly with Buffy, he's been, you know, having a conversation with somebody else.
Yeah.
You can only assume is whatever being was taunting mm-hmm. him at the end of lessons.
Yeah. Or just air, because he is nuts.
Yeah, he is insane, as he is aware of.
Yeah, I love the moments of lucidity that he has. There was one in the last episode where Buffy, I don't think we mentioned it while we were recording, but Buffy's like, Spike, you're fucking nuts. And he just like deadpan looks at her and he's like, well, yeah, where have you been all night? Yeah. And he does it to Xander later in the episode too. He's like, I'm nuts. What's his excuse?
Yeah, but he, by the way, I almost lost our game there.
I saw it happening. I saw it happening. And
it's
I was
like, the entity that, but yeah, you can always assume that Spike is either talking to that entity or himself. So you might look at this and he's like, oh, he's having two conversations right now. No, I'm pretty sure bro's having three. Yeah. At least.
At least. Bare minimum three conversations out of here. Yeah, the one I really like is when he kind of puts it together in his own weird way, because he's like, everyone's talking to me. No one's talking to each other. I love when Willow's like, I found somebody, you know, flayed, what could do something like that? And Spike just goes, well, you did.
You did once. You did once.
She's like, okay, other than me.
I heard about that.
We see this scene again from Buffy and Xander's perspective, and they, of course, for them, it all sounds like nonsense until he mentions Willow. Not by name. He just says...
He says, button, button, who's got the button? Yeah. My money's on the witch.
Yes. And then he says red at one point, and they're like, well...
Who do we know?
And it should be noted that while Xander is very convinced, or at least vocally convinced, that this was not Willow doing this, Buffy doesn't have that luxury. She has to consider it an option.
This does get brought up at the end of the episode, and I'm glad that they did.
I do too, and it's such a, like, we'll get to it, but that conversation is just so mature and loving, and like...
It's almost... Complete 180 from season 6.
So Willow goes to Anya's apartment. Anya's got some killer one-liners. Willow just walks in and she's like, yes, please, come enjoy my personal space. Willow says that she found a body by the high school. Anya just goes, yeah, that can happen. she says that the body was flayed, and Anya and Willow both immediately go,
Did you do it?
And then they're both offended.
What?
So funny.
And, I mean, yeah, and the reason that Willow says that to Anya is because Anya did mention that she had gone, that she had just gone to Brazil to do some vengeance demon-y things.
Yes. She also, I do love in their earlier conversation when she's looking for the others, Anya looks like, if between you and me, they've been a little temperamental recently. They had made me reverse a wish. So Willow asks Anya to help her perform a spell to locate the demons in Sunnydale. Anya is concerned that it might get a little sexy. She is right. I'm sorry. I'm going to have some things to say about Willow and romance this season. I'm seeing some chemistry here between her and Anya.
I love that Anya does say, like, oh, that almost did get sexy, didn't it? And Willow at first acknowledges it and agrees with it, and then immediately doesn't. And really gave me, like, as much shit as I have to say about How I Met Your Mother, one of my favorite recurring gags is that Allison Hannigan's character... Lily,
her crush on Robin.
Yeah, yes, she very much, kind of has like, is like bi-coded.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the right way to use that?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I wanted to make sure. But a lot of that is directed towards, Kobe Smulders' character Robin, to the point where, you know. Everybody kind of like, especially Neil Patrick Harris's Barney makes these offhand comments like, "Oh yeah, you know, like total be in, like you know, you and Lily should kiss," and then they look at each other and Lily's into it.
Yeah.
So I very much got shades of that in this moment.
That is a fun recurring joke. I do remember finding the resolution to it also very funny when they finally do like. Robin and Lily kiss, they do it to like shut Barney up, and they come away from the kiss, and Lily she's just like, oh, it's kind of disappointing actually. I guess I just kind of built it up in my head, and then you cut to Robin who's just like now like totally into Lily. When that show was good.
It is. It's just. It got so bad.
It got so bad.
Well, there you guys go. There's your free space on your Booze and Buffy bingo card. Jason bitches about How I Met Your Mother.
So they do the spell. We get lights for all the demons in Sunnydale. Anya's very excited. She's like, that one's me. but
they all just kind of accept that how many demons are concentrated in Sunnydale High. Because, you know, oh yeah, you know, that's the hell mouth. That yeah. just happens there.
Yeah. No, literally when before they even said that that it was the high school, I was like, oh, that bright spot where all the demons are is probably the high school. Oh, yeah. one of them, Spike.
We know what it's all about.
But, yeah, she, unfortunately, that spot is, so there's a lot of magic happening in that spot, and the map catches fire.
After Anya had previously voiced her concern that, oh, I don't want anything to happen to the carpet, which I can only assume is her being concerned about her security deposit.
Presumably.
And but unfortunately does catch fire and does leave what I assume is going to be a stain on the rug.
Yeah, I mean, it's a light burn. Probably a rug cleaner will get
that
out.
Or, you know, you could probably fix it by magic, which...
Yeah.
I'm guessing that Anya's going to try everything that she can to do it herself. And if it doesn't happen, then she'll reluctantly go to Willow.
The next time she's out, like, trolling for, like, vengeance wishes, she'd be like, try to get someone to, like, add on to their wish.
That is what is called pork in legislation terms.
So there was one spot, some spot in the woods where there are some caves that caught Willow's interest. She asked Anya to teleport to the cave to see if their demon might be there. And we learn that Anya can only teleport now for work-related trips. She has to fill out a form and everything. And they have a really, really nice heart-to-heart here where... Anya, you know, Anya's been killing it with the funny lines this episode, and will continue to as the episode goes on. But here we get...
And also, like, you know, that's just what Anya does.
Yeah. We get a little serious where Anya tells her that, like, you know, the vengeance has just not been fulfilling. She doesn't get the same enjoyment out of it that she used to. She's like, yeah, hurting people sounds fun on paper, but, like... and Willow really understands what she's going through, and, you know, they connect on this feeling of, like, that power and how overwhelming it can be.
Well,
and
it doesn't seem like Buffy or Xander are going out of their ways to find out what's really going on with Anya.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Dawn would...
No.
Even when Anya and Xander were together. But, you know, and maybe Willow is connecting with her because she can't connect with
mm-hmm.
Buffy and Xander and Dawn right now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, the fact that she is able, that opportunity does allow her to connect with Anya, it's nice.
It's really nice. And, yeah, like, even if she could connect with the others, they're not going to understand this feeling that she's having in the same way that Anya can.
Right.
I mean, Anya can connect with Willow on this, on a very personal level, because she's kind of going through something very similar.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. I love that we take just a little moment to let them bond over this a bit. So Willow decides to go investigate this cave herself. At the Summer's house, Dawn is helping them research. She is using the Demons website. And she does a great job. Really,
she really
her.
Does, yeah.
She's asking the right questions about how they found the body. And yeah, she is able to narrow it down to Gnarl, a demon who paralyzes its victims with its nails, and then eats strips of their skin and drinks their blood. And according to Dawn, this process takes hours.
Yeah, and the person is alive. It's grim. This is grim.
It's so grim. This is horror movie shit.
Yeah, and I always you've mentioned it before. I always appreciate when Buffy does err on that on the side of horror movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of it being on network TV, and obviously it has to have all of its meta narrative going as well. Mm-hmm. It's so nice when it does take the opportunity to show something like truly horrifying. Like I was thinking like the hospital episode in season three. That was in season three, right? When Buffy was sick, or was that four?
That was season two.
Okay.
It was season two, because it was right after Jenny Calendar was killed.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I think the next episode.
But yeah, it's...
R.I.P. Jenny.
It's always dope when they can actually really go full on horror and mm-hmm. make it something scary.
Yeah, I agree.
And another comment about Dawn. We've probably already mentioned it, but I am super happy thinking about Dawn finding her place in the Scooby Gang mm-hmm. finally this season.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Buffy wanted to happen at the end of season six.
Yeah.
And I like seeing that follow through, even if Buffy's a little hesitant at first.
Yeah, well, and it's great for it makes sense. One, as you know, kind of taking on this role of the researcher, she does kind of is filling a bit of the hole left behind by Giles, who would normally be the one kind of spearheading that.
And Willow.
But it also, we haven't followed a lot of Dawn's academic life, but it has been established in previous seasons that she's a good student and does well in school. So, minus a few incidents.
Needs a little singing to get through math.
Yeah. it tracks with what we know about her, that she is a bit academically minded, that her being kind of taking on the role as the group's researcher, I really like that for her.
Yeah.
It makes it feel like she has a place in the group, and, you know, the wider narrative of she has a place on the show. Which, I know last season that was a bit of a struggle sometimes with Dawn. It was like, okay, what role is she filling other than being Dawn's, or being Buffy's
and,
sister?
And I think, and again, we've mentioned this before, I think the vitriol aimed at Dawn is, one, the nature of her insertion into the show season mm-hmm. 5, which I think is BS, because it led to one of the best season-long stories mm-hmm. in the series. Yeah. And then I think the other big component of it is season 6 not really having something for her to do, and a lot of her storylines came across as weak, which that's legitimate, mm-hmm. but I don't think that's worthy of hatred.
Yeah. So they realized that if this demon was drinking blood, probably left a bit of a trail, they decide to recruit Spike as their bloodhound, I guess.
Pretty much.
An actual
bloodhound. Yeah.
It is really funny when Xander's like, Spike's getting kind of ahead of them. He's like, maybe we should, maybe we should get a leash for him. And Buffy's like, yeah, let's tie ourselves to the insane vampire. Great idea. Spike does lead them to the cave, where the demon is. Willow is already there. Spike fucks off, everyone goes into the cave. They are immediately attacked by Gnarl after some creepy whisper sing-songy. Ness and Dawn gets scratched and paralyzed.
Sorry, I love that, like, you know, she starts saying that paralysis is, like, setting in, and as they're carrying her away, they said, "Oh, it's just like you said! Good job, yeah! Good on you!
You nailed it, Dawn!" they, listen, it's really important. Positive affirmations are very important for teens.
It's so funny, because I mentioned how I could tell that this was a Jane episode, and you said you don't remember it being so funny. But now looking back, there's a lot of funny stuff in this.
I feel like because the meat of the episode is leaning more into horror and drama with Willow, that in my mind, that sort of stuff bubbles to the top.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of funny shit, mm-hmm. which we're about to get to some of the funniest shit here with Dawn.
Yes.
But they do, Buffy blockades the entrance to the cave, which normally...
Yeah, they want to keep Gnarl in.
Yeah. Normally, great strategy, you know, that way she can come back. But this does, they do inadvertently trap Willow in there as well. The demon attacks Willow, taunts her.
This is really the first time that we get our, like, a full-on view of Gnarl.
Yeah, yeah. It's been just hints and that kind of mm-hmm. teases, but yeah.
Shadows.
He is, like, taunting her while he's, like, cutting her up and, like...
And we get a little shot that is used in the in the opening credits.
But, yeah, poor Willow. She's all alone, scared. Buffy and Xander carry the completely paralyzed Dawn into the house. They dump her on the couch, face down first. and then they flip her
over. Watch the head!
Buffy learns via demons, that, the paralysis is permanent.
And she just stops reading there.
Yeah, she just stops reading there. Buffy, was there a period at the end of that? No, there wasn't.
The internet was really slow back then.
True. Maybe it was still loading.
Yeah, it was still loading.
Oh god, don't
remember. I'm just imagining, that, you know, like, old web pages, how, like, you know, you would scroll mm-hmm. down, and then, like, it would do, like, a block
yeah.
at once, and then another block. Oh, so I'm imagining Buffy just saying, "Oh, the paralysis is permanent," which causes a paralyzed Dawn to go,
but then she's like, "Oh, no, it's permanent until the creature dies." Xander is worried about, they can't leave Dawn alone. They're worried about her vomiting. And she's like, "Joking about vomit."
So they ask Anya to come and watch her, putting her on vomit duty, which causes her again to say, "Vomit."
Yes. Anya comes over and she's like, "Well, what type of paralysis is it?" And they're like, "What do you mean?" And she's like, "Well, you know, there's different types." And she grabs Dawn's legs and, like, lifts them, pushes them up. Everyone immediately is like, "Stop, no."
And then they stay there.
Then they stay. And everyone's like, "Oh, cool, she's posable." but, you know, Anya just kind of twists her around, poses her into, frankly, probably a more comfortable position.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, "Ooh, maybe I can make her salute." And then and while she's doing this, Buffy just picks up these nuts that are sitting on the table and is, like, watching and eating them.
And she's like, "Where'd you get these nuts? Brazil."
The whole bit is fucking hysterical. Yeah. And Dawn is so incredulous the whole time.
Also, Anya is very much aware of what Gnarl is.
Yeah.
And she's just kind of, like, nonchalantly explaining stuff to her. "You know about this demon? All right, you're coming with us." And then we get probably the best funny bit of the entire episode, because they leave Dawn seated with, like, her left hand up, uh-huh. with, like, two fingers out, and I think, is it Anya who comes back?
I couldn't tell. It's either
Anya or Buffy. They come back, put the remote control for the TV in her hand, and then leave.
Yeah.
They don't even turn the TV on!
That's not gonna do her any good!
Exactly! It's so funny!
Now, between all of this hilarity, they do, Anya does casually mention that, like, "Oh, Willow's looking for this same demon." And they're like, "Wait, you've seen Willow?" And then, like, "Oh, yeah, she's looking for you all." And then they're kind of really like, "Oh, shit. Like, if Willow's looking for this demon, she might be in trouble. Anya's like, wouldn't it be tragic if you were just here being silly with your comically paralyzed sister while Willow was dying? Yes!
That's exactly what's happening. It's quite tragic.
The three of them return to the cave. We're not too concerned about Dawn vomiting now. She's in a position where that won't be an issue.
It'll just be messy.
Yeah, just be messy. It's not going to be a Kristen Ritter situation. Kristen Ritter's fine, Harrison. It's okay. I don't know why I just had to reassure myself that Kristen Ritter is fine.
You are probably a bigger Kristen Ritter fan than most people that I know. Probably because you're like one of the few people I know that's actually watched all of Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23.
And more people need to. It was such a good show. Oh my god, her character is such a fucking sociopath. It is so funny. But like a charming one.
Yeah, no, from what I've seen of it, because you've shown me a few episodes, from what I've seen of it, it feels like it checks so many of your boxes.
Yeah,
main female character, sociopathic, but to a great degree.
Yeah. And also just a really good like supporting cast. Like you've got James Vanderbeek playing himself. Mm-hmm. A highly exaggerated version of himself.
That's always funny when you can do it.
Oh, right? Yeah. So they get to the cave. Anya does confirm to the others that Willow is there, and she also confirms for Willow that Buffy and Xander are there.
There's this really great moment when Anya does say that Buffy is trying to kill this thing, and she's like, but I don't see them. He's like, no, don't worry, they're here. And that like moment of reassurance,
mm-hmm.
Anya doesn't notice it, but it means so much to
yeah,
Willow.
I think she says like, I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. And I was like, aw. She also
she is saying this while paralyzed because yeah. She also got scratched by the gnar. Yeah. I don't know if we said that.
I think so.
Okay.
Well, we're saying it now. Mm-hmm. If we didn't. Anya does his like, Buffy's fighting the demon, but if they do come over here, I will have to run away. It's like, she also is like telling Xander where our Willow is. She's like, she's right here. Step back a bit. Your foot's in her. Anya has told Buffy that the gnarl's weakness is its eyes. And yeah, Buffy, she finally grabs that sucker and just, those thumbs go right in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Anya's like, Buffy killed the demon. It was gross.
I do love when you can get a more unique kill mm-hmm. in... God. I feel like any other person I'd be talking to this about would just be like, ew.
Not me.
But I know. You are one of the few people who's like my horror movie discussion safe places.
There was I won't say which character for any listeners who watch the show and haven't seen the newest episode, but in the newest episode of Chucky, a character died this way by Chucky literally like gouging out. Well, first he like bit off a bunch of his face and then gouged out their eyes, and it was brutal. Mm. And I was like, damn. Anya runs to get help, and then Buffy and Xander look to where they think Willow is, and they're correct. But they are talking about, talking about like about Willow, how they don't really know how they're going to be able to find her, how to help her. But as they're doing that, Willow does suddenly become visible, and we hear her as well. She's in the middle of talking, and she's relieved to see them. She's glad that they didn't abandon her. That's all nice and happy.
Yeah.
The next day, Willow is in Buffy's old bedroom, now hers. We see some boxes in there that moved her stuff in.
And, you know, that also makes sense as well, because I doubt Willow would ever be able to sleep in the master room again.
Yeah, absolutely not. I wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So Willow's meditating on the bed. Buffy comes in, and Willow explains that she's actually using magic to regrow the skin that she's lost. But it's she has to take a break because it is hard work. I'd imagine it would be. And Buffy tells her that Dawn's researching what happened to her, and Willow says, "You know, there's no need. I did it myself on accident." And she was just like, "I was so scared of seeing you all and your judgment, and I subconsciously did this to us."
I am so glad, because it could very much have been we don't know why this happened, and then they all kind of put it together. But I love that it's a realization that Willow comes to and then explains it in this way.
Yeah.
Like, again, this is just smart writing from Jane Espenson.
It's so good. And it's so much more meaningful that it was something Willow subconsciously did than if it was just something random.
And I feel like her realization that it's something that she did, it kind of is showing an after effect of all of her, let's be honest, magic therapy that she's undergoing.
Yeah, absolutely. Buffy confesses to Willow that she did suspect Willow might have been responsible. And Willow's like, "Yeah, I know you did, and that's okay." She's like, "Honestly, there was a while where I thought I might have done it too." And Buffy does tell her that Xander never believed it, and Willow's like, "He did a little. He just has the luxury of not having to say it." It was just a very sweet, like I said, very mature discussion between all of them. It's like they've known each other for so long, and they've lived in this world for so long with each other that they, and especially after last season, have gone through so much that, you know, they can have this frank discussion about this, and no one's feelings are hurt.
I think it's because of season six, especially.
Yeah,
obviously, like the whole of their friendship, but season six especially, I think we get quite a few of those moments in this season, mm-hmm. which is, you know, you've got like the obvious winks and nods to stuff from before, but another important thing about the final season of a show is that you show that your characters have grown, and to have characters come at odds over stupid things, at this point, you know, it's almost to the point where it's unacceptable. Like, really, guys, you're going to go into this?
Yeah.
You guys have been through so much more than this.
Yeah.
It's one of the most frustrating things about the Wheel of Time books that I've been reading. I'm like, oh my god, everybody needs to grow the fuck up.
I remember being very frustrated during the seventh season of Game of Thrones by the aggressively manufactured conflict between Sansa and Arya. That I remember the whole time that was all happening, I was like, so either these two characters are acting wildly out of character, and having an extremely stupid conflict, or they're working together to bring down Littlefinger and pretending to be in conflict with one another for his benefit. And I remember being so frustrated by that, because of course it was the latter. So I was like, okay, fine.
Spoiler for season 7 of Game of Thrones.
But I was like, why didn't I get to see that? If I go into the season and I'm like, if I was told like, oh yeah, part of the plot of the season is Arya and Sansa working together to take down Littlefinger and expose his crimes, I'd be like, that's fucking awesome. And anyway, I need to get off this because I'm mad.
Oh, BTW for people who might get offended by what I said about the Wheel of Time. In all fairness, I am just almost done with book 7, so I'm like halfway through the series. So I'm sure you all have comments if you know all about Wheel of Time. They're like, oh, he doesn't know a goddamn thing. You're probably right. But this is how I feel now after, like, you know, 2 million words at this point. So
I will read those one day. But today is not that day. So, Willow starts meditating again, but she's struggling because it's taking a lot out of her. So, Buffy offers some of her strength to Willow, and the episode ends with them meditating together.
Willow explains to Buffy that everything is connected.
Yeah.
And this makes Buffy think that, then can you draw strength from me? And Willow says, yes. And Buffy says, like, I've got a lot of strength and I'm okay with giving it away. Which is a little bit of foreshadowing. Yeah. I don't want to say what, because that's like, you know, major spoilers. But I do want to hint that that's a really clever piece of foreshadowing if you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's really good. And that's where surprise,
Jane Espenson is very clever.
What? but yeah, that is the that's the end of the episode. It's a lovely note to end on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad. It is important that Willow spent some time away from the rest of the gang at the beginning of the season. I think it would have felt very fake if we had started the season and she was just there with everyone like nothing had happened. But,
you know, she's still got a lot of stuff to work through and answer for.
Yeah, absolutely. But this the timing of her return feels right. She's not away for too long. And this reconciliation feels really earned.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a really strong episode. I really, really like it. Probably one of my favorite season 7 episodes.
Yeah. I think the premise and the writing and the execution give this a 4. But I think how good the humor is as well
mm-hmm.
bumps it up an extra half. So I'm actually going to give this a pretty high 4.5 bits of Willow out of 5.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure are delicious.
I'm right there with you. 4.5 dead bodies by the high school. It's a really strong episode.
I feel bad for that half.
Yeah. So just a couple trivia, bits of trivia for this episode. It is the only episode of the series to not feature any guest stars billed at the start of the episode.
The only one?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. And really, I mean...
So Gnarl and Mac go uncredited, or
co-starring credits at the end. But I'm looking at it and I'm like, other than the Gnarl and the guy who gets it, and Mac, there aren't any other characters in this episode outside of extras
mm-hmm.
Who aren't their main cast. So, and also, Camden Toy, the actor who portrays Gnarl, previously was one of the gentlemen in Hush.
Okay.
And will have a recurring role later in the season as a different recurring monster.
Okay. I had a guess as to what it is, and so I mouthed it to Harrison. That's why I snapped my finger like, hey, look at me.
It's like, because I was reading off the screen, and I was like, what the fuck is he snapping at me for?
That was just meant to be like, hey, can we confirm this without being audible?
And then he'll also be in an episode of Angel playing a vampire in season 5. I'm trying to see if he's like a...
Ooh, another point I wanted to make. So I think with a lot of these episodes taking so far in season 7 taking place during the day,
mm-hmm.
this season has a much brighter feel to it.
It really does.
And I mean, you know, that definitely helps having the high school, because having stuff happen during the school day allows you to have that brighter
mm-hmm.
lighting without, you know, go like... just for the hell of it, like give it a reason. And you think about back to season 6, how so much of that took place in like at night in a very like non-lit Summer's house or Magic Box, and obviously
Spike's Crypt.
But you know, even, and I didn't even think about that until just thinking about Willow sitting in her new bedroom with the sunlight coming in. And I really enjoy that. Really appreciate that.
Speaking of the magic box, I am pretty sure this is the last time
we get any
magic box. I loved the magic box. RIP to the magic box. But, you know, they really love trashing those sets when they're done with them.
They do.
All right, so that's same time, same place. What a great episode. I really enjoyed it.
A lot of fun.
I liked getting to watch it with you. And John, technically.
John was there playing on his Switch.
Yeah. Making fun of me for thinking that Lowe's has a grocery store.
That was so funny.
Just for the record, I do not think that Lowe's has a grocery store, but he likes to troll me.
Does he like to gnarl you?
Well, that's my business.
Giggity.
All right, Jason, take us out.
All right, I will. Thank you for joining us on Booze and Buffy. We'll be back next week with Angel Season 4, Episode 2, Ground State.
I'm so stoked to this one. I don't remember if it's good or not, but there's some. I was reminding Jason which one it was before we started, and I was just like, I can't even remember if it's a good episode, but it really goes for something. I'm Harrison. You can find me on Instagram at Harrison Alexander Kaufman and on Twitter at Harrison Kaufman. That's CoffMan.
And I'm Jason. You can find me on Instagram at YamiJ357.
And you can find us on Facebook, Insta, and Twitter at Booze and Buffy, or you can email us at boozeandbuffy@gmail.com. The and is spelled out A-N-D.
And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes. And you know, we want to put some good out into the world. It feels like we're kind of cycling through all the same fucking things, but I think it was Alabama that just passed some fucking straight up medieval abortion laws. Literally put it laws on the books from like the 1800s.
That was Arizona.
Arizona, thank you. I knew it was one of those terrible ones.
No, Alabama did the IVF.
Oh, that's right. So, yeah, no, reproductive health is very important and is under attack on several fronts. So, Planned Parenthood and other organizations like it really need our support. Harass your legislators, both at the local level and at the national level. Because, yeah, it's fucked.
Indeed.
All right. Well, with all that, go slay.
And be gay.
Bye.